Imagine casually walking to your one-room schoolhouse, looking over your shoulder, and realizing you're being actively stalked by a pack of wolves.
Yeah, for Rosanna LaRue Landreville, born in 1894 on a Saskatchewan ranch, that wasn't a thriller movie. That was just like a Tuesday morning.
It really sets the tone for today's deep dive. We are unpacking a single fascinating biographical source today, tracking Rosanna's life story.
And our mission here is really to show how she completely shatters our standard image of the pioneer era.
Right, because we tend to picture these incredibly stoic, unsmiling statues just suffering in
Oh,
silence.
absolutely. But her story is full of this wild, resilient spirit. I mean, it mixes terrifying frontier danger with immense heart and just hilarious childhood mischief.
Okay, so let's set the scene at Jackfish Lake. I mean, wolves, they are literally being tracked by apex predators on the way to math class.
It's wild, but despite that harsh environment, kids are still going to be kids.
Right, they find trouble.
Exactly. Rosanna, along with her brothers, Wilfred and Antoine, had some serious nerve. They actually managed to find Grandma Sophie's hidden stash of hard liquor.
Tucked away in the dirt holes of the root cellar. Right.
Yes. And, well, they drank it.
As kids do.
Yeah. But to hide the evidence, they refilled those empty bottles with cold tea.
Which is honestly a brilliant crime until Grandpa Moise invites a government official over.
Oh, man, the timing.
Yeah, he proudly pulls out the liquor to offer him a drink and unknowingly serves the guy cold tea.
Prompting his absolute favorite swear word. Hey, Moody's.
It is exactly like a modern teenager drinking their parents' expensive vintage wine,
Oh,
right?
for here.
And replacing it with grape juice and then watching their dad unknowingly serve it to his boss.
And the best part is that nobody confessed. I mean, teenagers avoiding their parents' wrath is just a universal constant, whether it's 2024 or 1904.
Definitely. And that kind of nerve, it didn't just disappear when she grew up, it directly translated into a boldly independent adulthood.
Oh, fiercely independent. I mean, picture this. She's a young woman, under 5 feet tall.
Okay, tiny.
Tiny, wearing a white mutton sleeve blouse, culottes, and these tiny size 1.5 riding boots.
Wait, size 1.5.
I know, so small. And
Great.
she's just galloping to work on a massive stallion.
Her father must have been completely appalled.
He was horrified, but she had really grueling responsibilities. She worked at the Indian Mission, where she was a teacher, a nurse, and the primary caretaker.
Feeding the students that daily noon meal, right? Hot tea, cod liver oil, and sailor bread. Wait, is sailor bread like hardtack?
Exactly. It's a rock-hard, non-perishable biscuit made of basically just flour and water.
Yikes.
Yeah, it was cheap and it never spoiled, but you practically had to soak it in tea just to avoid breaking a tooth. The conditions were incredibly austere.
And navigating that daily reality required real grit, which she brought right into her partnership.
She really did. She married Roque Landreville, who was actually a classically trained student from Quebec. He came west, fell in love, and they built this remarkably resilient 57-year marriage.
But their early life was incredibly humble. I mean, their first home was a two-room house with a dirt floor.
Yeah, which was actually a wedding gift from her parents.
But they clearly kept that sense of humor, like in 1921 when they bought a Model T Ford.
Oh, the Baby Juliet incident.
Yes, they're out for a family drive, the back door suddenly pops open, and the baby just tumbles right out into a ditch.
And they had to frantically reverse to scoop her up.
It's one of those things that's terrifyingly funny in hindsight. But I do have to stop you there, though,
Okay.
because we're laughing about early cars and Baby Juliet, but there's a much darker reality to pioneer life.
That's very true.
They lost a twin baby in a horrific buggy accident when a horse spooked, and later they lost a 9-month-old son, Charles, to an infection.
Yeah, it was devastating.
I just don't understand how a family physically and mentally gets out of bed the next morning after that.
It's hard to fathom today. In an era before formal therapy, survival was entirely collective.
You mean the community stepped in?
Exactly. When a profound tragedy like that happened, neighbors would take over the farming, the cooking, chopping the wood. They essentially carried the physical load.
Forcing the family to just keep putting one foot in front of the other.
Right, until the acute shock wore off. They survived because of those enduring community ties and their deeply rooted faith.
And Rosanna clearly paid that forward. When they moved to Alberta, she raised 7 children, sang in the choir, and charitably fed the needy.
Even when she was scrimping just to feed her own family. She and Rocco both passed in 1972 at age 76, leaving behind this incredible legacy.
So, when you face a modern daily frustration, Consider viewing it through the lens of your ancestors' unbelievable resilience.
I love that perspective.
Maybe the ultimate survival tool wasn't just physical toughness, but the absolute refusal to let tragedy steal their mischievous sense of humor.